Okay, the plan is as follows. We will finish the derivation of the path integral for partition function. Then we will discuss the partition function for free fermion gas. I will show you then how to evaluate sums over Matsubara frequencies. And at the very end, I will compute the heat capacity of free fermion gas. Okay, this is our plan. So let me start with the formula we ended up during last lecture. We wrote down the expression for partition function as the average over the whole basis in the Fock space, and then inserted the resolution of identities to convert it to the integrals over coherent states, or the set of Grassmann variables at each step. And we ended up with this expression. So what is the advantage of this expression? If we look at those averages, then we see that original operators act on coherent states. So we deal with the Hamiltonians of the form H tilde A dagger A equal to H A dagger A minus mu n equal to sum over I j H I j minus mu delta I j A I dagger A j plus sum over I j K L V I j K L A I dagger A j dagger A K A L. So these Hamiltonians are normal ordered. So all creation operators stands to the left of all annihilation operators. And when we look at these averages, we see that annihilation operator act to the right and creation operators will act to the left. Thus, we can just write that phi k plus 1 minus delta H tilde phi k will be the following. We substitute operators, original creation and annihilation operators, simply by psi bars taken at step k plus 1 and by psi k's taken at step k. So thus we are going to have. And because delta is infinitesimal, after that we exponentiate back what stands here. So we are going to have exponent in power minus delta h tilde psi bar k plus 1 comma psi k, right? And this will just a number, and we will use the property that tells us how the overlap between psi k plus 1 and psi k is evaluated, and we get one more exponent. So exponent will be minus sigma psi I bar k plus 1 psi I k. Right. Good. So any questions at that point? So then what we do next, we substitute everything into this lengthy expression and take the continuum limit. Take the continuum limit, delta going to zero. So what we are going to have is the following. Z equal to the integral of product k equal to 0 and minus 1 d psi bar k psi k. Okay, so exponent This is the result of computation. Sum over k equal to 0 n minus 1. Here we have delta psi bar k plus 1 minus psi k over delta, right? Here delta and delta, we plugged this exponent and took care of the presence of all these exponents and simply rearranged the terms. Okay, right, and then we have minus a tilde psi bar k plus 1, comma psi k times delta. So, and in this expression, we are going to take the limit delta going to 0. So, good. Good. So, what do we observe? We observe the difference. Here actually bar. Yeah. And here I missed psi k. Okay, good. And we see here that we encounter the term that resembles derivative. So in the continuum limit, we are going to have the following. That this psi bar k plus 1 minus psi bar k divided by delta psi k going to d over d tau psi bar of tau psi at tau, where I formally substituted delta by d tau. And our tau is now a continuous variable that is instead of integer numbers that enumerate the steps. So any questions here? Just on one. That's very, very good. Just on one. Just on one. We converted this difference into the derivative. Okay, and the other terms are simpler. This one, h tilde of psi bar k plus 1 psi k goes to simply h at psi bar at tau psi at tau. So here, going to a continuum limit, it's simple enough. And finally, let's take care about the measure. So what's this? So we have the product of measures taken at each step. D psi bar k, comma psi k, n minus 1, of course. So in the limit delta going to 0, we will simply assume that the limit of this object exists, but it is formal. So we write it as d with capital letter of psi bar comma psi. So when we encounter this notation, we should simply imagine nothing more than this. Than this product, yes.
So we're doing this in the Euclidean framework, right?
Right.
In principle, we have some kind of time ordering in the Hamiltonian, at least, right? Because the psi bar is evaluated at k plus 1.
Right. Right. Yes, we have exactly. Yes, we have exactly. So in several minutes, you will see why sometimes this is important. The advantage of this formalism compared to the formulas of Green's functions is that we don't have to take care of time ordering when we write down the convolutions involving Green's functions. This is the advantage. But sometimes it is important to keep in mind the time ordering that was already set forth from the very beginning when we wrote down Hamiltonian in the normal ordered form. I will tell you more. There is another approach to compute grand partition function in the real time. This is just formally imaginary time. That's what you correctly said. This is the Euclidean formulas. So this, the formulas that computes partition function in the real time is called Schwinger-Keldysh formulas. And it is used to treat non-equilibrium properties. So there, things are more complicated, and we have to take care about time ordering explicitly. But we're not going to discuss this. Yes?
Is the equation bent on the top one? How do you get the first term?
Where? For the partition function?
Yeah.
For the partition function. So here?
No,
here?
The very last line.
This one?
No.
One below here. So just use this and substitute this expression back into this lengthy formula and try to analyze term by term. It's just an exercise. It's just an exercise to check. It's a little bit painful if you see this from the first side, but this is what happens, in fact. This is what, in fact, happens. Okay, right. Okay, good. If you still have the doubts, just come to me. I will show you. I will show you explicitly. So okay. So once again, when we encounter this measure, we should keep just in mind. Just imagine that this is this. So I don't see any better way to explain what the measure means in functional integration. So good. So as a result, we can write down our final expression for partition function. D of psi bar, comma psi, e in power minus s, psi bar, comma psi, where s is called the action. So let me call this as action. This as action and we have for this action. So we will do one more thing. We integrate by parts this term. So we transfer the derivative from acting on this term into the derivative acting on this term. So this way we encounter minus sign. So equal to the integral. So this is the limit equal to zero corresponding to zero step of our partitioning. And this beta corresponds to the final step of our partitioning. So the lower limit is zero, the upper limit is beta. We have d tau. So keeping in mind this form of the Hamiltonian. So sum over I j. So I j's, when I write I j k l, so these I j's are not the I j's that you see here. Those letters simply denote the steps. And Here in the Hamiltonian, I, j, k, l, so they denote the states, the degrees of freedom, basically. So sum over ij, psi I of tau times d over d tau minus mu delta ij, right? So delta ij plus hij, so psi j tau plus sum over I j k l vi j k l psi I bar tau psi j bar tau psi k tau psi l tau. So square bracket. So this is our action. This is our action. And we forgot one last thing here. We must supplement this expression by the boundary conditions. The boundary conditions state that for bosons, psi fields and psi bar fields at zero are equal to psi fields and psi bar fields at beta. And for fermions, when we relate psi's at limits, we add the minus sign. So the important thing, and actually crucial thing, when we evaluate or try to evaluate this expression explicitly, is that psi at zero here in the lower limit is equal to zeta of psi at beta. And psi bar at zero equal to zeta psi bar at beta. So again, zeta equal to plus one for bosons, and zeta equal to minus one for fermions. So any questions here? How do you understand what? How do you understand? So remember our yesterday's derivation when we converted sum over Fock states into the sum over coherent states. So and proved the theorem when we exchange certain averages, there is a change of sign for fermions. So this is a very very important thing. That's why I spent so much time trying to prove the certain theorems yesterday. Okay. This is the boundary condition. So and. Why is this so important? Because we now, after writing all this, should ask us, and how are we going to evaluate physical quantities using this path integral, using this action, using this formula for partition function? And there is a recipe. There is one more step that will allow us to proceed and extract meaningful physical results. So psi. It's a function of time tau. And tau varies from zero to beta. So it's a function of finite segments. So what we do next, we Fourier transform. We Fourier transform using discrete Fourier series of those variables. We write psi I bar tau equal to 1 over square root of beta, which we should keep in mind that beta is 1 over t. That's also an important thing. It's not simply some kind of abstract ladder, but it is the inverse temperature. So 1 over the square root of beta, sum over omega n psi I bar at omega n, e in power I omega n tau, and right, and psi I of tau equal to 1 over square root of beta sum over omega n psi I to omega n. And here we have minus e in power of minus I omega n tau. What are omega n? Omega n are determined exactly from these boundary conditions. So in order for these conditions to take place, omega n must be equal to 2 pi n t. T is 1 over beta for bosons. And omega n equal to 2 pi n plus 1 half t for fermions. So people say that these discrete frequencies are integer frequencies, and these frequencies are half integer frequencies. So these frequencies are called Matsubara frequencies. Matsubara frequencies. And sum over those frequencies are called Matsubara sums. They are named after Japanese physicist Matsubara, who first introduced them to develop the methods for finite temperature diagram technique. So for your following the development by Feynman in real time formalism. So very good. So when I rewrite this action after plugging these Fourier transforms, and our action will contain sums over Matsubara frequencies. So we will have the following. Ij sum over omega n psi I bar omega n. Here we have minus I omega n minus mu delta I j plus h I j psi I omega n. And the interaction term will look like this. 1 over beta sum over I j k l. And here we have sum over Matsubara frequencies. I will label them as omega 1, omega 2, omega 3, omega 4. But because we have just an integral over tau from 0 to beta, and this integral will affect this term, those Matsubara frequencies must satisfy the constraint. Delta omega 1 plus omega 2 plus omega 3 plus omega 4, comma 0. So the sum of Matsubara frequencies entering interaction term must be equal to 0. And we subsequently get Vi jkl psi bar I omega 1 psi bar j omega 2, so psi k at omega 3, and psi l at omega 4. So this is because of the obvious identity that integral from 0 to beta. So this is because of this integral from 0 to beta of d tau e in power I omega n tau equal to, right, beta delta omega n comma 0. So this is the Hamiltonian that people typically work with. So we are done with path integral for partition function. As I mentioned yesterday, the very broad classes of real Hamiltonian, they can be recast just in this form, in the form written above, and the action when we compute physical quantities using path integral approach is given by this expression. Let me just pause here and ask if you have any questions. Where? In the expression for what?
Omega n.
One second, what should
I think? Shouldn't that be omega n equal to pi n divided by t?
It divided by what? T? T? Huh? Sorry, I don't. Yeah, bt is 1 over t. So this is just the consequence of the definition for these Fourier transforms. So sometimes people have 1 over beta here rather than square root of beta. So the question whether it matters, well, it's a good question. It matters if we can say compute the partition function, say using a partition function directly, using this formalism. But typically, when we compute physical quantities, then it doesn't matter how we rescale the field. So in a moment, you will see why. So that's okay. So when we substitute, we have 1 over beta squared, and 1 more beta arises from this integration, so we're 1 over beta. So very good, very, very good. So then I will show, first of all, how to do computations using this approach for just simple systems, free electron gases. So our next topic will be partition function. For free, well, I will compute this for free fermion gas, but the generalization to the free boson gas is trivial. For free fermion gas. So what are we going to compute? So interactions are absent, and our action is given just by this first term. However, as I said, so ij, kl can be so any quantum numbers that characterize the state, right? We take creation operator, we create a particle in the state, and we can equally annihilate it. So we will write down our Hamiltonian in momentum representation. So we are going to have h tilde equal to h minus mu n equal to sum over k, and sigma denotes spin, here epsilon k minus mu, a dagger k sigma, a k sigma. So epsilon k is the kinetic energy of particles. I will write it this way, k squared divided by 2m. I will set h bar equal to 1 just to save time of writing. So it won't lead to any confusion. So this is what we have for free gas of quantum particles, either bosons or fermions. So spin is absent if bosons have spin equal to 0, but this is our gen. So then we have that as a result, S of psi bar comma psi equal to, or I will label this as S naught, emphasizing that the fermions or bosons are non-interacting. S naught of psi bar comma psi equal to 2 sum over Matsubara frequencies as given here. Sum over all momenta and spins, psi bar I will label, I will keep the momenta and spins here in the subscript, but write explicitly Matsubara frequency. Just for convenience, how I used to write it. Minus omega n. And we have the following. Plus k squared over 2m minus mu psi k sigma omega n. To save, again, notational, time during the, so writing formulas, I will label this as psi with index, sorry, k, so yeah, this k squared divided by 2m minus mu, I will label this as psi k. This is just for convenience, this is quite customary notation. And we now face the problem how to compute partition function and try to extract the physical quantities. But partition function is one thing, but the physical quantities are expressed when we have the expression for thermodynamic potential, grand canonical thermodynamic potential. And our goal will be, in fact, not to compute Z itself, albeit it is possible. It is possible, but more complicated and not very convenient. We will focus on this grand canonical thermodynamic potential expressed as minus T times logarithm of Z. So, and Z, yeah, is equal to the functional, yeah, to the functional integral, the psi bar psi e in power minus f naught of psi bar psi. We will focus on this quantity. But still it is not very convenient to compute. Not very convenient to compute because Z is not very convenient to compute. And rather than computing Z, it is shown in the Altland and Simons book how to compute Z directly. But it is quite time consuming and not very convenient. So instead we will use the following properties. We take into account that the number of particles is expressed as follows through grand canonical thermodynamic potential. It is minus the derivative of omega over mu. And it is equal to minus T divided by Z, then D psi bar comma psi E minus S naught psi bar comma psi. This is easy to compute, but before doing this, we introduce the important thing called Green's function. Yep. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah, absolutely right. Yeah, overly, yeah, yeah. D of this. Yeah, we perform the operation of taking the derivative under the operation of functional integration. We have to differentiate this exponent. Thank you very, very much. D over d mu of this exponent standing under the integral. Thank you. So in order to proceed, we introduce the following concept. Green's function function for free fermion gas. Column. It is defined as follows. It is labeled as G naught omega n comma k, and is just an average of the following construction: psi k sigma omega n psi bar k sigma omega n averaged equal to 1 over z, where z is written there. It is the partition function for free electron gas, or sorry, free gas of quantum particles in general, and the functional integral d psi bar comma psi e in power minus s naught psi bar comma psi so psi k sigma omega n psi bar k sigma omega n. Oh yeah, in general, yes. Yes, but let's assume that we are, of course, in the absence of magnetic field and in the absence of any magnetic ordering in our system. In this case, it doesn't depend on spin, so it should, but let's skip this letter. But thank you very much for pointing this out. Yeah. So we have this object, and what we should recall how we evaluated similar averages when we considered the average over Grassmann variables with the Gaussian weight. So we should take what stands there. We should take only one term in the sum that has k sigma omega n the same as we have here. So this is the usual way how those averages are evaluated in field theory, quantum field theory. And we can straightforwardly write down the result. It is equal to 1 over minus I omega n plus psi k. This is our basic object, a basic tool that we use to do calculations. What we have here? We have here Matsubara frequency standing in the denominator. So what's you saw, of course, Green functions in QFT1 and QFT2. So what's the basic difference? The basic difference is that Matsubara frequencies are discrete rather than continuous. And this is exactly these properties that allows us to calculate, to treat thermodynamics and to calculate physical quantities at finite temperatures. This is the consequence of the fact that we are really in Euclidean formalism, in, as people say, imaginary time, rather than real time, and we have Matsubara frequencies here. I didn't know whether you saw Matsubara frequencies in QFT course, QFT2 course. No, we didn't. And probably towards the end, François may mention something similar as he mentioned when he taught for the first time for PSI, but I'm not sure if he will tell you now about this. So you should keep in mind that real frequencies are substituted by Matsubara frequencies. This doesn't mean, however, in general, that you cannot, while accessing certain properties, switch to real-time formalism. In order to do this, you need to do the process of analytical continuation. But I will mention this tomorrow when analytical continuation is important and what it allows us to extract. But let's assume that our Green's function contains Matsubara frequencies and energy spectrum minus chemical potential. So in condensed matter, spectrum is typically evaluated with the chemical potential subtracted. So now let's return to this formula for n. We need to take the derivative. So what do we have? We have the following: n equal to minus t divided by z integral d psi bar comma psi. And we differentiate the action with respect to chemical potential, keeping the minus sign. So we take into account. You see, action actors also under exponent with the minus sign. Sometimes in textbook, you have the notation where action enters the plus sign. And sometimes textbook have the notation where this Green function is defined in the opposite way. First stands psi bar, then psi. This is quite common. It may be a little bit confusing if you used in your work to one notation, but in the paper or book you encounter the other notations. But you should keep in mind that the physics should remain unchanged. Always, right. So minus under exponent and minus before chemical potential, we have plus, and as a result, we have e in power minus s naught psi bar comma psi. And here we have sum over k omega n and sigma of psi bar k sigma omega n psi k sigma omega n. And here we recall that we have the Green's function standing there. So, and we also take into account, look, here psi bar stands first and psi stands second. We revert this. This minus sign will cancel. And we have t times omega n k sigma g naught omega n comma k.
Right.
That's true. Right. Yeah. That's true. Yeah. This is just for fermions. Exactly. Yeah. Here. This is for fermions. But of course, a similar procedure, right? Similar procedure can be done for bosons as well. Yes, for bosons. But this is for fermions. Now we will do computation for fermions because I will consider fermions only. And second, fermions are more important because when we do calculations for fermions, we allow ourselves to practice how to deal with Grassmann variables. That's also for the things for bosons are more straightforward and simpler. Right. Very good. Let me just make one more comment. So this expression is valid not only for free gas. For free gas, if you imagine that you substitute instead of action for free gas the action for interacting fermions, then you can still differentiate over mu and get the same expression, only you will have the Green's function for interacting gas. So we will see what consequences it will have. So for fermions. So once we have the formula, we encounter the natural question here: how to evaluate sums over Matsubara frequencies? How to evaluate sums? So we know how to take integrals. We know how to take integrals if frequencies are continuous, and we know how to integrate over momenta. But What about Mutsubara frequencies? Is there is a good way, is there a good way how to do those? So I want, let's try to answer the following question. How to evaluate sums over Mutsubara frequencies? And here I will write for bosons and fermions. Because I wrote my notes keeping in mind that we need to know for both. So suppose we have some function. Have some function h of omega n, where omega can be both bosonic or fermionic frequencies. That is smooth. That's very important. That is smooth and decays sufficiently fast. Fast as those frequencies tend to infinity. So we need to evaluate the sum. It's an arbitrary function. It's a function of omega n. That we assume to be smooth, not containing any singularities, and decaying fast enough at infinity.
But isn't
that
omega n is the discrete value?
Yeah. So we can imagine any function of any argument, and the argument can assume some discrete values. That's very good. So if you imagine that omega n is not discrete but continuous, this is what we mean by smooth. You can always imagine exactly this. Yeah. The case are sufficiently fast. So we cannot differentiate. Yeah, we can of course differentiate over argument, but formally, but we can't integrate over this argument because. The argument is discrete, and the function will assume discrete values. So we can only sum instead of differentiating. But nevertheless, we can imagine that omega n is continuous, and we can. I will give you in a moment some example where this function is not smooth and not regular. Or I can use the name regular function like people use. The same in complex analysis. So sum of h of omega n. So what's this? Here we use a very interesting trick. We assume that we live on some complex plane. Call it that. And we position the Mutsubara frequencies in a discrete way along imaginary axis. Say for fermions, we will have this structure. So this will be omega 1 equal to 2 pi, say 1 half t. This will be omega 2 equal to 2 pi 3 halves t, and so forth. I hope it is clear. So these circles are Actually, but the I omega 1, I. So these dots, not circles, but dots, they correspond to Matsubara frequencies, times I. And we imagine that we are doing contour integration in this complex plane. Imagine that Z is a complex plane. Give me a second. And we are doing contour integration this way. We take this contour C that is very close to imaginary axis, and the direction on the contour on the left, that it goes from up to down, and on the right, it goes from down to up. And in this case, we can write the sum in the following way. It is equal to zeta is plus 1 for bosons, minus 1 for fermions, over 2 pi I, integral over contour C of the following object, dz, g of z, h, as a function of minus I z, where g of z is equal to beta divided by e in power beta z minus z. So why is that? Why is that? This is because this function g of z has poles. Poles at the values equal to I omega n. Poles at I omega n with residues equal to zeta. So assuming that our original function does not have any singularities at imaginary axis of z, it does have any singularities, then we see that this contour and poles are lying to the left, when we move along this contour. So this contour allows us to encompass all relevant poles that will give the sum over all Matsubara frequencies. So a good exercise is to check this statement that this function has poles at I omega n with residues equal to zeta. It's a formal statement. It's the formal representation when we converted the sum into this integral. So when we take the residues of g of z at poles I omega n, the residue in denominator will cancel this zeta, 2 pi I, according to the theorem of contour integration will pop up in numerator, will cancel this. And here we will just have h of omega n's. Sum is converted to the contour integral. This is zeta equal to plus or minus 1, yeah. Right, exactly, exactly, yes.
But so is there some intuitive way to see this? Because you said it's purely formal, but there is actually some connection, right? If omega n is a fermionic Matsubara frequency, that's just a Fermi distribution.
Right.
So is there a physical way to understand this?
When we derive the trivial result, you will immediately see. The other point that the choice of this g of z is not unique. Sometimes people choose tangents and cotangents, but it typically doesn't matter because tangent and cotangents is a constant plus or minus twice the Bose-Fermi distribution. So typically it's not important, but this choice is convenient because, as you said, you exactly encounter here the form of Bose-Fermi distribution, apart from the factor beta. Typically people evaluate those sums with prefactor T, so in this case things are simple. Now, we assumed that our original function h of minus iz doesn't have any singularities here. Well, if it does have singularities, then this will be really a physical disaster. Because the propagator will have unexpected poles for certain values of energies. But we will assume that everything is fine. So everything is fine, and all poles of our function h lie away from imaginary axis. So suppose our function has two poles, right? Two poles. So what is the trick? The trick is that we deform the contour, and we can do this because I said that h is smooth, or better to say regular, or even better to say analytic function in Z space. So we deform this contour first this way, hoping to encircle all those poles. Right, we are free to do exactly this. And in the process of deformation, we squeeze all those contours in such a way that they completely surround those poles. That's why I said that to do this properly, we must have our function be analytic, smooth, or regular, and decay fast enough at infinity, so that the portions of the contour that go far away simply disappear. This way, proceeding this way, we can write that this is equal to the following: minus zeta. Can anyone tell me why minus? Why do you have additional? Oh, so the poles are circled in the clockwise direction, meaning that the pole lies to the right to when we move along the contour. But convention is plus is only when our singularities or poles lie to the left. So minus zeta, sum or all poles, I will formally label them as letter k, their residue at h minus iz g of z, where z are equal to zk. So these are zk's. Zk. And we just take the residues of our original function. And here we substitute, instead of z, zk, and sum over such contributions. This is the general strategy. And we now apply it to compute N for fermions. So let me tell you the following. I will make this comment afterwards. So thank you. So returning to the computation, we need to compute what? We need to compute the sum of over omega n of minus omega n plus xi k. That's very, very good. This function has only one pole equal to equal. So when that doesn't belong to imaginary axis on that plane, very, very good. But if we look at this function, then we immediately see that this function does not decay fast enough at infinity. Does decay fast enough at infinity because 1 over z is not decaying fast enough function. In this case, we should expect some contribution from infinitely far away regions of that plane. But can we still proceed? The answer is yes, we can. Yes, we can. And we should just keep in mind that this is the sum over Matsubara frequencies from what stands here, and this is a propagator. So we can write the sum as follows. This is average integral from 0 to beta of the following average. Psi k sigma tau psi bar k sigma tau, right? D tau. So if you substitute Fourier transforms of those fields, you will immediately recover this sum. That's just a simple exercise. But after representing this sum in this form, we notice the following thing. That remember when we considered the averages, when we derived the path integrals, we saw that time for psi bar, variables for psi bar, is a little bit ahead of the time, imaginary time, I will call this variable time, a little bit ahead of the time for non-bar psi's. You remember when we partition function, then operators containing a dagger acted on the left that contains higher steps. This just means that in fact here and only here, we should keep in mind that this integral should be interpreted as this, k sigma tau, and here psi bar k sigma of tau plus delta, where delta is exactly the step that we set in the limit n going to infinity tending to zero. So it is some infinitesimal. And this, the presence of this infinitesimal changes everything. It leads to the following, that we in fact need to evaluate not simply this thing, but we need to evaluate the sum I omega n delta divided by minus omega n plus sigma k. So this just means that our function that is given there, g of z h minus I z equal to as follows, beta e beta z plus 1, plus 1 for fermions, right, times e in power z delta minus z plus psi k. Yeah. Exponent. In the definition of the propagator, though I wrote this without this delta, it should be kept in mind when we evaluate sums sum of the propagator that Bart psis have time that is a little bit ahead. But this is only here. This is only here. Just I understand your concern. You try to have a deeper explanation of this trick, but this is the formality that arises from the derivation of partition function and the averages written in the path integral formulation. Okay. So let's look at this function. When the real part of z goes to minus infinity, to plus infinity, then this is exponentially small, right? And if real part of z goes to minus infinity, then this is one, and this is exponentially small. So at infinity, due to this trick, this whole expression is exponentially small. And we can safely take the residue of at just only this pole and get that this is equal to, I write this way, this is equal to, right, 1 over e in power beta epsilon k plus 1 equal to 1 over e in power beta, sorry, psi k, yeah, plus 1. And when you substitute back psi k, you get a epsilon k minus mu plus 1. So, and this is nothing else than the Fermi Dirac distribution. So let me just check if everything is fine with signs. Minus omega n minus z. Yeah, this is what we should have. Z, 1 second, z equal to sigma k. So let me just see if signs are appropriate. S plus residues. H minus I z. Mm-hmm. So we set infinitesimal delta going to 0. Infinitesimal delta going to 0 at the very end. So we encountered the celebrated Fermi Dirac distribution. So very, very good, very good. So when we calculate more complicated sums with respect to propagators, then we have more than one propagator, and we don't encounter the problem of convergence how we encountered here, this problem. So we don't to add this exponent with the infinitesimal. We can see simply just ignore them. Yeah.
Isn't that like if the real of that is greater than 0, isn't that the exponent blows up? I mean,
which exponent here blows up in this expression?
Was the
when z goes to minus infinity, say, along real axis, then this is 1, right? And this is exponentially small. But when z goes to plus infinity, then this is exponentially large if you drag this into numerator, become exponentially small. And this infinitesimal, just infinitesimal, it's just an elegant trick. So now we can do the following. Now we have our expression for n. Our expression for n. N actually temperature missing exactly. So yeah, exactly better. Yeah. 1/10 temperature actually missing. Yeah, 1/1 temperature better. Very, very, very good. I thought that something was missing. So n is equal to, as a result of all this, equal to, and we had the expression t over, t over v sum over k sigma of g naught omega n k. We had this expression. So, one second. No, I don't have V sorry, no. It's just temperature times sum over omega n, sum over k sigma, this expression. And we have that this is sum over k sigma of an f epsilon k sigma of k sigma 1/e and power beta k plus one. Good. Quite a familiar result from statistical mechanics. I remember during your interviews, David liked to ask this question, how to derive this from partition fractions. Now very good. Very good because we now have that n is equal to minus d omega over d mu. And since we can write here epsilon k minus mu plus 1, we can just do the simple integration over mu, keeping in mind that when mu is going to infinity, then our distribution turns to 0 and the whole partition function equal to 0. And we, as a result, get omega in the following form, minus t sum over k sigma logarithm 1 plus e in minus beta epsilon k minus mu. This is the grand canonical partition function that was derived during the course of statistical mechanics, or actually you did the corresponding exercise on your tutorial, that was derived from grand canonical distribution. Here we derived the same result from the path integral approach. And nothing should be surprising, everything should be consistent. So questions. And I will tell just about one more concept. I have time just for one more thing. So those computations can be easily repeated for bosons. So questions, comments? Okay, if there are no questions, because I simply showed how to derive quite familiar things from path integral. So once again, path integral is very convenient when you generate perturbation series. It's very convenient because it is always more pleasant to work with fields rather than with operator. And path integral formulation does exactly that job. It saves you some hassle when you work with ordinary operators in second quantization formulas, but allows you to work directly with fields. The only thing that you should be extra careful when you integrate over fermion fields, over Grassmann variables. There you have to take additional precautions how to take care of signs. So, and one important concept that quite often appears in condensed matter in the applications that was unfortunately not told during the course of statistical mechanics. So I think that here it's appropriate to introduce this concept, and we will stop here. So the topic called heat capacitor free fermion gas, just read in my notes. I don't have time to cover this. So during your tutorial tomorrow, you will have a simple exercise that will allow you to apply this expression, to calculate the sums of Matsubara frequencies. So I will talk about the notion of density of states. So density of states. This is, or it is labeled as DOS, DOS. That's important to know, because this concept is quite convenient. Why? Because many physical properties, for example, transport properties, charge transport properties, spin transport properties, then thermodynamic properties such as heat capacities, response functions such as magnetic susceptibilities, they contain the expressions that contain density of states. And you will see this during tomorrow tutorial when you do a very simple calculation to compute Pauli susceptibility. So if you saw this before, that's very good, but because you will not explain this during the course of statistical mechanics, I will do this now. Where is this concept important? This concept is important because your states are labeled by momenta and spins. Momentum is a vector quantity, right? It's a vector quantity. K can point in any direction, but energy spectrum is not a vector quantity. It's a scalar quantity. It's a function of a vector. But what enters thermodynamics, when we talk, of course, about quantities that the average over the whole space where the direction is not important, enters epsilon of k. And epsilon is a scalar quantity. So can we shift the sum over k into the sum over or integral over energies? So let's consider the following. Sum over k sigma of the following quantity, f of epsilon k. And what we do, we switch from summation to integration. I believe this trick is not new for you. You saw this in QFT1, I believe. So summing over spins, and we assume that we deal with still fermions. This will give us factor of 2. Spin can be 1 plus or minus 1/2. 2 from spins. Times v, volume divided to pi cubed. Let's assume that we consider simple three-dimensional cases, but generalization to the case of arbitrary dimensional is trivial in this problem. Different k of f of epsilon of k. So we have some function of epsilon, and epsilon in its turn depends on k. Why can I write this way? It's more convenient. So what we do now, we transform this integral in the following form. Dv divided to pi cubed. We still have d3k, and here we write the following. D epsilon f of epsilon delta of epsilon minus epsilon k. We just introduced the delta function and nothing else. And we can write this further as v times d epsilon mu of epsilon f of epsilon with mu of epsilon equal to 2 times 2 pi cubed d3k delta of epsilon minus epsilon k. So this is the definition of the density of states. You notice, so we presume that we know the energy spectrum, and we compute some function following this definition. You notice that my definition has the factor of two. Sometimes you can encounter, it's again depends on the source. Sometimes you encounter the statement density of states per spin. Here it's a total the density of spin of states, and we imply that particles of both spins behave completely equally and can be treated on the equal footing. But at the same time, you can encounter the definition without this too. So, and in this case, people say it's a density of states per spin. So this is a very important quantity, a very, very important quantity. So when people calculate the energy spectra based on real Hamiltonians, they always look. Okay, and what is the density of states? What is density of states? Because exactly this quantity determines the thermodynamic properties. So let's do a simple exercise and compute the density of states for our three-dimensional gas of fermions. So for epsilon k equal to k squared divided by 2m, mu over epsilon is equal to 2 divided by 2 pi cubed, d3k delta of epsilon minus k squared divided by 2m. So we are lucky, in fact. Why are we lucky? Because our energy spectrum, it depends only on square of k, on the absolute value of vector k. And we can go to spherical coordinates and write, so 8 pi cube here times 4 pi, and here from 0 to infinity, k squared dk delta of epsilon minus k squared divided by 2m. Good. So from this definition, we immediately see that the density of states is zero when epsilon is smaller than zero. When epsilon is smaller than zero, this means that we don't have anything if epsilon is negative, meaning that there are no particles at all for a negative value of epsilon. Well, quite often this is not the case. For example, if you have Dirac fermions, you consider the fermions in graphene that have the excitation spectrum that is linear in K, but here for a gas it is quadratic. It is quadratic. So once again, epsilon K here is the spectrum of particles. For the interacting case, we are talking about the spectrum of quasi-particles. And now what we do here, we just make the substitution K equal to 2mx and have the following 1 over pi squared here, 0 to infinity. The prefactor will be 2m in power 3 halves, right? After this and x dx, and we just take square root of 2mx, square root of 2mx. 2mx and K equal to square root of 2mx. And we have here x dx divided by 2 square root of x. So, right, delta of epsilon minus x. So we have to this 2 over square root of x comes when we write down this differential, and we straightforwardly eliminate our delta function and get the result m divided by pi squared times square root of 2 m epsilon. So this is the density of states for free fermions. We see that it is proportional to the square root of epsilon. And this is the consequence of the fact that we worked in three dimensions. So any questions? If no, that's it for today. Tomorrow we will talk about interacting gas of fermions and the concepts of Landau theory.